The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
70s.
You know, Jerry the Bull called last hour, and he was we were kind of laughing about the inflation report in which, inflation has cooled to 3.3%. Of course, they exclude everything that you buy, and he talked about something which actually was holding its value, and he talked about that, you know, you cash in a couple of silver dollars, and you get enough to fill up the tank, like 17 cents a gallon. You know, essentially the equivalent is what he was talking about. Very interesting. Which brings me, of course, if you're looking at this time in which the Fed says that they're all, you know, inflation, it's cooling, and the stock market's going, hooray, they're going to lower interest rates, and then we're going to be able to zoom assets even higher than, okay, physical gold and silver is a great thing to have, this just in case, and tuck away and protect some wealth from the ravages of the inflation that the government says is not there, but you know is there. Talk to Jay Austin and Company, Gold and Silver Buyers, one of my oldest sponsors. Great people. Just drop by 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland or 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. You can also call for your appointment for the Grants Pass store, 482-3715. With all the economic fluctuations and uncertainty, more and more people looking for ways to safeguard some wealth. Stock market can be a roller coaster ride, also a great ride too, sometimes not so great. Savvy investors looking to some reliable assets like gold to store value. Do that today with Jay Austin, the recognized experts, 482-3715.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros and Full Service Auto Repair.
Hey, it's
106.3 KMED, and this is the Bill Myers Show.
Landmark Legal Foundation, national treasure as far as I'm concerned. It's a nonprofit that upholds the Constitution and founding principles through legal advocacy and education. And they advocate or advanced an originalist approach to the Constitution, that the words in the Constitution mean what they meant at the founding, and that those words still mean the same thing. Of course, I would imagine that Landmark is probably lonely among many of the legal firms today, but we're glad to have Mike O'Neill, who's the vice president of Landmark Legal here. Is that a pretty good descriptor here? You're kind of lonely fighting for the Constitution these days, but it's a fight worth having, isn't it?
Absolutely. And there's some other groups that are fighting a good fight as well. Not completely alone, but certainly if you compare it to the other side, the other side dwarfs us. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, let me put it this way. Well, when the American Bar Association seems to be more worried about diversity, equity, and inclusion,
right,
and how many rainbow flags can be put up in June, rather than, hey, can we actually defend everyone from the inclusion?
Right, setting aside protecting the rule of law for other ideas isn't the best course of action for those groups.
All right. Wanted to talk, Michael, about a couple of, by the way, it's landmarklegal.org, the website. You can find out more about what we were just mentioning. But, Michael, I wanted to make sure that we dig into a couple of stories. Of course, everyone's been talking about the Hunter Biden thing, and I want to talk about that briefly. I don't think it's the most important thing, but we should touch on it. And as far as sentencing for his three felony convictions that he ended up getting, what normally happens to someone first time out? I'm hearing everybody saying, well, it's like nothing, or maybe a fine or something. And then other people are saying 4 to 5 years for many people that have done the same thing. Any idea there?
Right. It could be a few years. Again, it's discretion with the judge. This is his first, I think this is his first felony conviction, if you can believe that. Wrap your head around that. So his first felony conviction, I want to say most likely he will not serve any time in incarceration, but that is on the table. It might be one of those things where you report for a day and then you're released. So I don't think the judge has scheduled a sentencing hearing. Unlike Donald Trump case, where we had that scheduled for July 11th, there is no schedule right now for his sentencing. So it could range. I wish I could give you a more definitive case. It does speak in his favor, the fact that he's never been convicted, it's nonviolent, and that he's most likely going to use some extenuating circumstances, is going to express contrition to the court, is going to be able to give a good account of himself of why the sentencing should, why he should avoid prison time or jail time.
Mike, will this conviction on felonies cause problems then for the IRS tax case, which I believe is also to be sentenced at some point? Isn't that the case?
Right. I think that's a trial that's going to be coming up in California in the next few months. And it shouldn't cause any problems in that prosecution. But keep in mind, the important thing here is the more serious tax the more serious tax violations, the statute of limitations has run on those, so he can't be convicted or tried for those violations. And why did the statute of limitations run? Well, the Department of Justice sat on this case for a number of years. So for all intents and purposes, he's really avoided the really thorny provisions of the tax code.
One can't help but think that there was undue political influence on this. I don't like saying that, but it just seems obvious. Fair enough.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And let's be clear here. This conviction is nothing more than a political cover for President Biden as he ramps up his political campaign. I mean, we're in mid-June here. The eyes of the nation are going to turn to the Biden versus Trump political campaign, and this is to provide cover. And you're seeing the mainstream media is buying this hook, line, and sinker that no one is above the law. Well, if you delve into this and you see the actual details of here of what Hunter Biden was prosecuted and convicted of, the government really, the Department of Justice really had no choice. And they really had no choice for what reason? Well, if you can remember, Bill, Biden and the Department of Justice were poised to reach a sweetheart plea agreement several months ago. And but for where Hunter Biden would have pled guilty to some misdemeanors and then avoided prosecution for any other crimes. But for the fact that this judge, to her credit, in Delaware, sussed out the problems, the unprecedented nature of this plea agreement, the Department of Justice would have reached this plea agreement months ago, and this would have been wiped clean. So the Justice Department's hands were tied. They had to prosecute him. The evidence was overwhelming. The jury only deliberated for about 3 hours, which is really quick deliberation, and reached a unanimous verdict that he was guilty on all three charges.
All right. And to be fair, the judge did a good job in this case.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so didn't just allow politics to let this be swept under the rug. There is another problem, though, that I don't know if this gets swept under the rug or if it's something which is handled internally, because this case ended up bringing to light that when Hunter's girlfriend, who was his late brother's former wife, you know, went and retrieved the gun that had been thrown into the trash bin. They couldn't find it. And that's because, was it the Secret Service or the FBI? I forget which one it was, but one of those two agencies ended up going and retrieving the firearm from the dumpster. Are you familiar with that part of that?
Right. I think they retrieved it. And what's another piece of evidence that was uncovered here and verified was the laptop. So the Department of Justice was forced to admit that Hunter Biden's laptop was authentic. So what does that show? That opens up the entire can of worms and proves that the Biden campaign, the Department of Justice, engaged in election interference in 2020. Now, we saw that the FBI seized the Hunter Biden laptop in December of 2019.
Right.
Now, as the FBI, they have all kinds of technical experts. They were able to verify the authenticity of the Biden laptop shortly thereafter. Look, you have to assume once they get this laptop in their possession, they're going to make sure that the evidence is verifiable and they're going to assert their experts. So within a short period of time, I don't know the specific dates it would, but you have to say within weeks or at the most a few months, FBI was able to verify the authenticity of the Hunter Biden laptop in early 2020. Yet, what narrative were we proffered with throughout 2020 that the Biden laptop was a Russian disinformation campaign? You had 51 intelligence officers stating on the record that this was a Russian disinformation campaign. Yet what we take away is this laptop was verified and it was Hunter Biden's. Now, so this checks all the boxes. This is intelligence agencies saying intelligence officers making misstatements.
Okay, no, I'm going to go beyond that. Intelligence officers lying, okay?
Exactly.
All right. This goes beyond some misstatement. It's not like, I kind of made an error on this one. They lied openly and unashamedly about it because I haven't heard any of them coming back and saying, hey, I'm really sorry we signed that letter with 51 intelligence agents saying that this is Russian disinformation. I don't see any apologies that ever came out. Did you?
No, absolutely. And this was an orchestrated effort to subvert the election. And this pale, you know, we go on and on about the January 6th events and efforts to undermine the election, undermine the electoral process. Here we have an orchestrated campaign by intelligence officials, White House, by the Biden campaign to subvert the election. And the media completely complied with this. Wow. And have you seen any accountability? The question remains here, is Joe Biden going to be asked a question at these presidential debates about the Hunter Biden laptop? Remains to be seen.
Well, that might be the place to ask. But going back to the retrieving of the gun, and I think it was the Secret Service that did this. Isn't there some investigation that should be done on the Secret Service? Because the Secret Service, in essence, was trying to cover up the crimes that had been committed or trying to protect these government officials. I don't think they're supposed to protect government officials from their own criminality, are they? Or former, even the family.
I don't think anything is beyond the pale. And I think it remains to be seen whether one of the bigger themes here is loss of faith in the systems here. And if you see criminal justice systems, you see the FBI, you see federal law enforcement participating in these sorts of activities, and it makes the general public is left with the impression that they're not going to get a fair shake, that certain individuals are above the law. And it runs contrary to the narrative that everybody's trying to proffer that, look, even the president's son isn't above the law. Well, when you delve into the details of this case, you see all of the advantages that Hunter Biden received.
Boy, I mean, I'd like for my own family to be able to have that kind of protection racket. Kind of running around me that if my kids were to do something wrong, hey, that's all right. We got some officers looking out for you. Yeet. Okay. Mike O'Neill, once again, Landmark Legal Foundation. He is the vice president of that amazing group here. All right. I think we've covered that enough, and it's pretty dirty. All right. Let me shift attention, though, to something which I think is really the story, and I don't know if it's going to get the play that it should, and this is the continuing attack on the Supreme Court. And this is the last governmental branch, I think, that has still some faith left in it by the American people. And there's a real push to especially bounce justices out who are conservatives, such as Justice Sam Alito. And there was a recording that was released the other day, and I was wondering if you'd explain what happened with that.
Sure. Well, this was a semi-public event. You had a left-wing activist posing undercover as a Christian and actually essentially ambushing justices and their family members, and in this particular case, Justice Alito and his wife, with all kinds of leading questions to try to characterize the justices as these right-wing Christian nationalists, you know, God forbid. And so if you look at the dialogue and the questions that were asked, it was really an ambush. But the answers by the justices, by Justice Alito and Justice Roberts, respectively, were when you look at what they said, was perfectly above board, and there was no problem with anything they said. And also, what really is shameful here is the targeting of the spouses. And look, if you want to ask questions for sitting Supreme Court justices, that's one thing. If you want to ambush them with gotcha questions, that's one thing. But trying to attack and posit these questions and then characterize the spouses, that's really out of bounds. And what's going to happen here is the country's going to suffer because justices, surprisingly, justices for occupying these really important high positions in our government are oddly accessible. You know, they put themselves oftentimes out there. They're at these events. You can't go up and you can't just go up to President Biden, for example, and question him or anything like that, or staff members will surround senators. But you can go up and you can talk to justices in all kinds of instances in informal conversations. Or they appear at panels. They talk to law students. They talk to lawyers. They talk to judges. What's the takeaway here? The takeaway here is, hey, if you're going after my family, why am I ever going to put myself in a position where you can ambush me with these ridiculous questions and then completely mischaracterize what was stated?
So we would be seeing ultimately less of the Supreme Court justices. You would not be able to talk to them, or they would be less forthcoming because they would just be continually on guard for, I guess, in essence, an amped up cancel culture session kind of deal, that thing?
Exactly. And back up a little bit and say, well, why is this happening? Well, this is happening, as you just said, Bill, because the U.S. Supreme Court is outside the bounds of the leftist control. They are willing to actually apply the law, engage in textualism, engage in constitutional originalism, and interpret the cases accordingly. And just simply because all of their decisions are not in conformance with the left agenda. And if you actually look at the decisions, you see that there's a lot of unanimity in all kinds of cases. But because they're not going hook, line, and sinker with the leftist agenda, they are targets. So they're targets in their personal lives. Their families are targets. There's also going to be an orchestrated effort to expand the Supreme Court, the number of justices on the Supreme Court. The left simply can't live with the fact that they do not control the justices on the Supreme Court.
All right. So this is another one of these by any means necessary lines of attack then, correct?
Absolutely. And one other point, these kinds of ambushes, it contributes to the animosity to the court. And we've seen how this all plays out. You have threats to the justices' lives. You have these lunatics who will show up at justices' homes and threaten their lives. So all of this behavior, all of these attacks on the courts, not only undermine the integrity of the court, but also place the lives of the justices in danger.
Going back to that conversation, which was secretly recorded here, the activist who represented herself as a religious conservative, I guess, and what she did, it was that apparently Justice Alito endorsed her suggestion, and the quote here was that people in this country who believe in God have to keep fighting for that to return our country to a place of godliness. And that was the quote that the activist ended up saying. And I guess Sam Alito, Justice Alito, said, well, I agree with you. Is there something outside of constitutional bounds of what Alito agreed to there in that conversation with the activist?
Oh, absolutely not. And if you see the record speaks for itself. I encourage everybody to read the Dobbs decision written by Justice Alito, primarily the controlling decision, and see whether there's any kind of influence of a religiosity in that case. If you look at it, and this is we're talking about the case that overturned Roe versus Wade, one of the seminal cases of the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. And Justice Alito is a practicing Catholic, but there is, if you read that opinion, it is purely on the merits of the Constitution, on the law. He doesn't inject any of his personal religious beliefs into that decision. And so he's completely above board. And all our justices have personal beliefs, but what separates these justices from others is they are willing to call balls and strikes and apply and use the law and engage in constitutional analysis and not insert their personal political opinion or personal religious beliefs or personal political opinions into their decision-making process.
I remember talking to legal critics back in the day, you know, before the Dobbs decision happened, and you know, even I would talk with people from the liberal persuasion about this that would actually admit that Roe v. Wade was very poorly decided law, and that's why it was ripe for reversal, not because there was a political change on the court, but just because it's something that never should have happened in the first place if you were actually paying attention to the law at that time. In other words, the original decision was a politicized decision, right? Is that pretty much the way they looked at it?
Absolutely. The original decision was politicized, and then the reversal in the Dobbs decision was the opposite of that, was a strict interpretation of the constitutional authority of the federal government, of the state. And again, I encourage everybody to read that. And if Justice Alito is what the left is trying to characterize it, wouldn't you see that in that decision? Mm-hmm. And you certainly don't. His opinion will stand the test of time, in contrast to the opinion in Roe versus Wade, which did not.
Well, let's hope that some cooler heads will prevail about this. And as far as the liberal justices and the conservative justices, leave them alone. Stop it. All right. You know, this is, if you want to be able to hear from them and actually be able to talk with them and understand their reasoning, and it doesn't always have to be in a formal session, don't engage in this gotcha stuff on either side of the aisle, okay? Because you know, all sorts of stuff can be taken out of context. Final question I have for you, and I don't know if you can comment on this or not, if you've been following much on this. But the city of Grants Pass, Oregon, has a case before the Supreme Court that they were arguing. This is about the homeless, the homelessness situation out here on the West Coast. I don't know if you've kept apprised of that at all. Have you? Do you have a feel on where that may go? I guess we're supposed to find out sometime in the next few weeks on whether or not cities will ever be able to control homelessness within their boundaries.
I'm not familiar with it. Does it involve what's the primary dispute? Is it the city wants to move to the is it generally about the authority of the city to control its own affairs?
Pretty much. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals more or less said that you know, if you don't have the whole homeless industrial complex shelter system in place there, well then you just have to let them sleep in your parks or in anywhere in public. And out here in the West, right, it's been you want to talk about disorder in the land. It's been hurting a lot. But okay, I didn't mean to ambush you that.
No, not at all. My general opinion is that, you know, is that if a city is going to try to exercise its powers to ensure that it's livable, then more power to it. And there shouldn't be a federal court of appeals shouldn't conjure rights out of thin air and say that there's some sort of obligation that's outside the bounds of traditional constitutional interpretation.
Yeah, I mean, nobody has the vagrancy policies these days, you know, in effect. But now it's gone completely to the other extreme where, my gosh, whether, you know, you have to almost build a homeless shelter that is a drug den. It has to be low barrier is what, you know, the Ninth Circuit, I guess it was essentially saying. And that hasn't been working out well for a lot of the West Coast cities. Yeah.
For us folks on the East Coast, and we see those pictures, and it's horrifying, and we feel for you guys.
Yeah, they've been the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals tally, shanty towns, I guess, or tent towns, or whatever you want to call it. But, well, we'll see what happens, and we'll probably talk with you about it after that. But thanks so much for your analysis on the Biden case and, of course, what's been going on with the Supreme Court. And we'll definitely have you back. LandmarkLegal.org. And Mike O'Neill is the vice president of that great group. Thank you so much. Be well. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
7:30, and you're on KMED and 99.3 KBXG.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable, sleek metal option? Look no further than Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. With our state-of-the-art snap-lock machines, we bring precise and efficiency right to your doorstep. No need to worry about transporting materials. We come directly to your project property. Visit StephenWestfallRoofingInc.com and discover the ease of quality of metal roofing done right. Transform your home with Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. Call today, get an estimate tomorrow. 541-941-3736.
Does your property have adequate, defensible space for fire season? Hi, this is Jeff with Quality Tree Service. Fire officials are again urging property owners to maintain a buffer clear of brush, low-hanging branches, and other flammable material. At Quality Tree Service, we can visit your property and recommend trimming, brush clearing, and tree removal if necessary to help provide fire protection for your home and outbuildings. Call me today for a thorough inspection and no-obligation quote. Visit QualityTreeServiceMedford.com.
One of each Forte VIN 785766 MSRP 21645 Sol VIN 237299 MSRP 22140 3500 due 10K miles per year zero security deposit all incentives and discounts to dealer plus tax title license 150 registration processing fee trading in a vehicle will not eliminate your debt negative equity apply to new loan balance and 63024.
Thinking about a new ride? It's time to trade in, trade up, and save at Kia Medford during the summer sticker sales event. Hurry in to get more cash for your trade in. Then trade up and save on our huge Kia selection, like a new 2024 Kia Forte LX. Or a new 2024 Kia Soul LX, just $139 a month lease, both for 24 months. Plus, once we make a deal at Kia Medford, we'll pay off your trade no matter how much you owe. Need credit? Go to KiaMedford.com to get pre-approved in less than 30 seconds with no effect on your credit score. Then find the Kia you really want, like Fortes or Souls, just $139 a month. Trade in, trade up, and save at Kia Medford. Click KiaMedford.com.
The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMET.
7:32. Mosey up to the bar, my friend. It is time for an email or two of the day. They're sponsored by Central Point Family Dentistry, Dr. Steve Nelson. It's next to the new Mazatlan Mexican restaurant in Central Point. Super comfortable place. I don't think you're going to have to spend a lot of time in the waiting room, though. They're pretty quick with you in and out. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. Get your appointment. By the way, they accept most dental plans and have one of their own if you don't have dental insurance. It's kind of similar to dental insurance. Better benefits and fewer limitations. I think you'd like that. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. Email of the day to Darren Croy today. Darren Croy was listening a few days ago, and we were talking about the cost of public education. And I think it was with Richard Emmons having that conversation. He says, Bill, I'll listen to your show every morning as I drive into work at Cascade Christian High School. I heard you mention our school this morning just before the top of the hour. The context was a discussion of the $30,000 cost per student at Three Rivers Schools. And you mentioned how that was significantly more than Cascade Christian High School and other private schools. For your information, Cascade is part of Grace Cascade Christian Schools. And we are a pre-K through 12 school. Our tuition for the 2024 to 2025 school year is between $9,400 to $11,800, depending on the grade. That's the tuition parents pay, folks. I'm proud of how our school manages its finances, and we're blessed to have a staff that delivers an excellent education while earning about 70% of what they could be making in the public school system. For all of us, it's not about the money. It's about the family, students, and the Savior that we serve. Keep up the good work. By the way, I love Wheels Up Wednesday with EP Autos. I'm glad you like it, Darren. I enjoy it, too. I always do that, okay? And interesting story there. Yeah, $30,000 cost. And we think that Richard Emmons and I were talking about that. Richard Emmons thinks this is why the Three Rivers School bond went down. When you start breaking that out, $30,000 for each student there when you take all the costs and bundle it in there. I mean, that's real money. That would be almost that's like you could send three kids to Cascade Christian System, almost three kids, for the price of one in the public school system. It's almost like we have designed a public school system not about educating the children, but about supporting the infrastructure and the bureaucracy which has been built up over the years. And, of course, unionized teachers force. Paul Prison writes in this morning, too, and he always writes a thoughtful one. And, Bill, this having to do with just Fauci, not Dr. Anthony Fauci. Bill, last week, the COVID Select Subcommittee grilled Fauci. Fauci was the tip of the spear of the largest global medical experiment ever conducted and a test of the degree of compliance the population would agree to suffer. In hindsight, it is stunning that a majority agreed to be injected with a hastily developed substance based on a technology with no history of application on humans. As far as compliance, mask wearing was enforced with vigor. Stores put one-way stickers on the floors. Checkout lines marked with 6 feet social distancing marks. Churches, by and large, closed their doors and went from in-person to online services. You got to be safe, don't you know? Fauci, a frequent guest on the media, enjoyed rock star popularity with posters and T-shirts celebrating the scientist. At the height of this insanity, Fauci made a statement in the third person to the effect of, to disbelieve Fauci is to disbelieve science. Hosanna, the incarnation of science, dwelled among us mere mortals. Okay? Although the testimony had the excitement of a soccer match, the impact on Fauci will be about the same. Some points of interest surface, Paul writes. There is no scientific basis or justification for the wearing of masks or social distancing. So our country was locked down, socially separated, scared stiff, children deprived of their normal development, businesses closed, some for good, all based on nothing. Not sure if it surfaced during this testimony, but Fauci's view on vaccine hesitancy and the voluntary nature of vaccine uptake was that those who remain unvaccinated shouldn't be able to work or attend in-person school until they get their vaccination against COVID. Voluntary indeed. If the social and economic damage is not enough, the medical effect is truly catastrophic. A sharp increase of previously rare cancers, turbo cancers, which are suddenly and unusually aggressive, myocarditis, neuropathy, and a host of other medical manifestations. Correlation doesn't imply causation is what is bandied around, but the correlation is so overwhelming that this dam is no longer plausibly holding back the real cause. Will Fauci be tried, let alone be convicted for crimes against humanity? I doubt in his earthly existence. An interesting and curiously significant event happened when Marjorie Taylor Greene addressed Fauci. She refused to call him doctor and opined that his medical license should be revoked. She's probably not aware that it is a Jewish custom to reduce persons who have committed heinous crimes to the concept of their crimes. For instance, the SS fellow Adolf Eichmann, I wasn't going to go into the Obersturmbannführer, but anyway, Adolf Eichmann, the bureaucrat that supervised the extermination of the Hungarian Jews, is reduced to a symbol of bureaucratic murderer as Eichmann. Ditto Dr. Joseph Mengele, who did cruel experiments on twins and oversaw selection for exterminations in Auschwitz. That concept is now simply Mengele. I believe that it is similarly appropriate to strip Fauci of his Dr. Anthony and simply reduce him to Fauci, the symbol of the greatest con job that led to the catastrophic reduction of our collective freedoms, happiness, and health. Deprive him of the adulation he so much craves. And see through his shtick of feigned exasperated patience and having to explain his exalted and superior knowledge to the plebs. Just Fauci. The evil that word embodies as a concept. Fauci, Hitler, is that kind of where you're going, Paul? Interesting. And very well thought out, as always. That's practically an email novel. I mean, it's longer than the normal email, but well worth it, Paul. I appreciate you emailing Bill at BillMeyerShow.com. We'll catch up on things, and we have State Senator Linthicum also on the way.
News is sponsored by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground by visiting MillettConstruction.com.
With SRN News, I'm... Hi, this is Mark from Jay Austin, and I'm on KMED and KCMD.
It's 7:42. You know, it's appropriate that we have State Senator and Secretary of State candidate Dennis Linthicum on with the bumper of Rebels from Tom Petty. I like that. You know something, Dennis? I think that's maybe that should be your theme from this point. It kind of like here it is. You're attacking the empire of lies here in Salem as running for Secretary of State. What do you think about that one? You ready?
Yeah, I don't mind that category at all. Everyone needs to be, you know, have this sense of almost being a professional skeptic with regard to what gets passed as legislation, because we're all aware that things are done, quote unquote, for the public good and for our safety. But at that letter you just read, what a fabulous analysis. I mean, it's just a summary, actually. It's not even an analysis, an in-depth analysis like you'll find on Substack. That was just a summary of where public health and those institutions were weaponized against us as individuals. And for no purpose. What was the real reason behind this? What kind of safety was required or was supposed to be instigated by all of their lies? And it turns out it was nothing but a money game. It was nothing but, you know, the profit for, I think, Pfizer was $300 billion. That's $300,000 million in profit. So, and the taxpayers paid for it all. They printed the printing presses or the digital printers, you know, just threw another zero or two on. And it's an enormous tragedy that the public isn't even aware of yet. But we keep refusing to address public debt, et cetera. And I think the Secretary of State's office is a keen place to get involved in this, because misstatements, fraudulent involvement, collusion, the misrepresentation, intentional omissions, all of those kinds of things that happen when the state is supposed to have internal controls to prevent those things, that's a perfect place for the auditors to sharpen their pencils and say, what in the world happened here? And why did Oregon, why did the legislature allow this to happen? Why did these divisions run fraudulent enterprises against the public? This is an important issue.
You know, I'd also add, you know, why is it that our state agencies seem to be so involved in political agendas rather than actually administering services as authorized by the state legislature? And you know something here, Senator, I'll just give you an example right now of something. I just got this this news release. I don't know if you're on the Oregon Health Authority news release system. Do you get those by chance on a daily basis?
Yeah, I get so much stuff. Go ahead with it.
Okay.
And I'll let you know if
Well, here it is. Oregon Health Association supporting LGBTQIA2S+ youth with a list of summer resources. Agency reaffirms commitment to queer young people as school year ends. And it's important, it says, according to Dean Seilinger, MD, it's so important that youth have access to the supports from family and community organizations that celebrate the rich diversity of their identities. And yet he's the health officer and state epidemiologist. And so apparently what Dean is, what Dr. Dean is talking about here is that OHA has to get all beyond the LGBT skewing of Oregon because schools are closed and somehow services won't be making it to, I mean, everything from the Oregon Youth Resource Map to the Transactive Gender Project at Lewis and Clark, PFLAG offering quick tips to parents. He has like a laundry list here, and he's taking state time and money to guarantee. I mean, I would have thought that OHA would be just more concerned about children's health in general. Would not you have thought about it would be a reasonable thing to be asking about rather than singling out the Island of Misfit Humans? I mean, what's going on here, you think?
Yeah, and for your audience, I did not see that. I did not read that.
Oh, okay. I know. I just got it this morning. I think I'm about to ask Dennis about this, you know? But
yeah, it's, you know, this is how far out of a line all the things that are wrong with our culture and our effective forms of what used to be effective forms of governance are upside down. And the Democrat majority has done this. They have, you know, not only did they burn Portland to the ground, but they're busy taking, you know, productive roadways within the city of Portland and turning them into one-way streets with giant bicycle lanes.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
In the number of times I've been in downtown Portland, I've never, ever seen a bicyclist. You know, you'll see people sleeping in doorways and defecating on the sidewalk, but you'll never see a bicyclist in the bike lane. And they push this mantra, we're going to save the earth by everybody walking and biking. And it's just not true. It's a little bit like your conversations with Eric Peters. They're making driving an automobile, you know, a truly American concept of individuality and the ability to move and migrate as the economy or as culture dictates. In the old days, I could take Highway 66 and go somewhere I'd never been before. And in so doing, I could say, I want to live here. I want to work here.
Well, no longer.
You stop in.
Yeah, yeah, we know that's not the case. But
that's not the case.
Yeah, and it's certainly true what you have talked about here. And it's kind of related to what we're talking about with this OHA release. And this is the reason I brought this up was not about, you know, I would be just as upset if OHA was going out there and promoting, hey, you know something, we want to make sure that all the people here in the state of Oregon, all the young children are going to church on Sunday and that they're having a biblically proper sexual lifestyle being done. You see what I'm getting at here? You know, to me, the state is supposed to be ideologically neutral with our tax dollars. And by the way, I'm not saying that being biblically correct would be bad. I'm not saying that. But it's what is the state promoting? I guess is what I'm getting at. Do you see where I'm coming from on this? You know, either sides of these coins.
Oh, yeah,
the
idea that the state is pushing one ideological perspective and not the other. For example, this same newsletter ought to. Why does it focus on these LGBTQIA plus XXX whatever instead of heterosexual normality? And calling that normal, is that offensive to the majority of the public, or is that offensive to a small fractional minority? And this is all political propaganda. This is a little bit like the, you know, Gaza to the sea, you know, or from
yeah.
the river to
from
the sea.
From the river to the sea, Gaza, yeah, Gaza will be free, yeah. Is this
you
something?
Know, yeah. If you've looked at the videos and pictures of the defacing of Royce Hall, UCLA quad and all that kind of stuff, it's just disgusting what they are doing to these traditional values, the statue of American heroes, American idealism, and they are doing this, they're defacing these things, and this is not because these students are rampantly involved in caring about Gaza. This is a political agenda. They got a box of 100 flags. They tear open the box. They walk around with all these beautiful, you know, Palestinian flags, and they wave them around. Same with the illegals coming up from Mexico. They've all got their Guatemalan or Honduran flags. They've got their Mexican flags, and they are coming into the United States. This is not accidental. This is part of a political process. It's a Marxist revolution taking place in the midst of our economy. And this is the weakness of our governance model, is we keep following the push in this direction or that direction or the other direction in saying, wait, the Constitution, these are not enumerated powers. We should not be doing this. We should not be providing, you know.
Well, we should not be catering. We should not be. We should be providing services as a whole, not services only for the politically aggrieved or those that are being promoted politically. And I wanted to ask you about, since you're running for Secretary of State, and I'm full on support of this. In fact, I would dare say, please go to electdentist.com and start writing big checks if you can, please, because it's going to take a lot to fight this. And what I'm curious about is, can the audit power of the Secretary of State be brought to bear on something like a politicized Oregon Health Authority, in which you could say this is not your mission, as you're not to be spending money, taxpayer money. Your mission from the legislature is not to be promoting politics or not to be involved in these political agendas. You are there to provide health services, you know, and administer them via the counties. I mean, is that something that could be done, in which you can audit the agencies and say, knock it off with the politics?
I think the government auditing standards are mostly focused on financial reporting and compliance and provisions of laws, but they do reach down into application of regulations, contracts, grant arrangements, and mm-hmm. other matters like that, where now we have a relationship with an NGO, a nonprofit that's actually generating a hefty profit on the backside. The nonprofit category is simply a federal tax
exemption
perspective.
Yeah.
And it's really got nothing to do with how beautiful the organization is run or not, or how wonderful they have accomplished their agenda.
Okay, I guess what I'm asking, maybe I'll try redirecting my question, counselor. Not that we're in court, okay? All right. Is it only the legislature that can redirect or call an agency to account for not really doing the job that it was assigned by the state legislature to do? And when you have the Oregon Health Authority going, you know, putting, you know, a bunch of bricks on the LGBTQ agenda, you know, especially for the kids right now, and seemingly forgetting about everything else. Maybe it's just because it's their so-called Pride Month. I don't know. But they're not really doing their job. They're promoting political agendas. That's what I was getting at. You know, who calls that to account? You know?
Yeah. So this is, you know, this falls under a category of, you know, faithful performance mm-hmm. to their legislative requirements, duties, and responsibilities. And now you can see how difficult that is to, and it's purposely vague like this.
Oh. Okay.
Because what typically happens is governments grow, and it what we're seeing right now in the name of public health, we see, you know, state authoritarianism or state control or state, you know, state-driven policy mandates, because the governor has said we will pursue DEI, and DEI is demanding, quote, diversity first, and so everybody has moved diversity to the top of the list.
Which means diversity essentially means anti-white, okay? We know that, right? Would you agree with me on that? It's really essentially what DEI means?
Yeah, it's really worse than that, because it's anti-traditional values. It's it's against everything that was utilized to build America up. And this is where earlier I mentioned a Marxist ideology, because this is a tearing down of our cultural responsibilities and norms and traditional values. And so diversity means, to heck with those traditional values, we're going to bring in every other value that we can find anywhere on the planet, and then claim that these values are the moral equivalent to the values we've been building into the fabric of the culture of the United States.
Kind of a simulacrum,
States
Ben.
Used to be a beautiful melting pot.
Yeah. So in other words, this is a simulacrum of a moral people, then. a simulacrum of sorts. Would that be too strong a way to look at it?
No, that's a pretty good description.
Okay, all right. So the Secretary of State's audit power is really about the financial shenanigans behind there, rather than just necessarily. I'm just looking for you know what the Secretary of State can do, because it's of such an important. And I think it's an undervalued position, or it's not thought of enough about by most people, which is why I'm asking. So you would really be involved in the nuts and bolts of, are they following budgetary and fiscal rules more so than you couldn't really change anything about OHA going political, the political orientation or politicized services. That's not in the purview of the elected Secretary of State.
Right. Well, the left has been very strategic in destroying our language, so that DEI now is a main driver, and ESG is also a main driver. And ESG, you know, is essentially another, you know, Marxist ploy, because there is no fiduciary standard for how you would rate somebody's ESG performance. And yet we are pushing this ESG onto corporate structures. And how do those corporate structures utilize their capital? Is that money used for good or ill in the corporate world? The same applies to our governance model, our bureaucracies, the 40,000 employees that work for the state of Oregon. How are those monies being utilized? Or if we're just pursuing ESG, which has no rating methodology, which has no fiduciary standard, which has no means test of any variety, how does the Secretary of State even weigh those? So the left has been purposefully destructive in erecting these barriers to sound governance.
Yeah, so barriers to actually getting control of it. So this still sounds like a legislative action. All right, in my fantasy world, then, Dennis Linthicum gets elected Secretary of State and then closes the administrative state. So, could I dream? Do you mind if I dream? My fever dream? Would that be okay?
Well, yeah. Think about, you were just describing with an individual the private education modeled, you know, somewhere near $10,000 between 9 and 11 versus $30,000.
For the public school,
and
yeah.
So you have all these individuals, moms and dads and families and single moms and single dads and workers throughout the community working their tails off and sacrificing in their own lives and in their own prosperity to enable somebody else, i.e. all the state employees, to prosper far faster than the rate of inflation. And you mentioned the inflation number at 3%. Oh, it's 3%. It's lower this month than it has been since last October.
Baloney.
Everybody ought to get into their brain. That's 3% from last October, then November, then December, then January, then February, then March, then April.
They also completely ignore you know, food, housing, and energy, or food and energy, really, because you call that too. Well, volatile, right? Just because we use it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, what a ridiculous measure to say, oh, and we're not going to pay attention to those prices that are volatile. What do you mean? Everything on the planet is volatile because of the tragic policies that have been created by the Democrat majority.
You know something, Senator?
I hope this conversation gets people to go to the Make Oregon Great Again event on the 22nd.
Now, you'll be speaking at that, too. Aren't you one of the speakers for the event?
Yeah, I'll play a small role. There's tons of other people who will be there. You also, in the commercial, there was a reference to John Lott. Remember, I invited John Lott to testify against a gun bill, and he drove from Missoula, Montana to Salem, Oregon, And the chair, Senator Prezansky, allowed him only 2 minutes to testify because all of these other individuals also wanted a chance at the mic. And people ask, can I give my time to John Lott? Can I give my time to Mr. Lott, et cetera? And the answer was no, no, and no. Each person is allowed their own 2 minutes. And then, and yet the proponents of the gun confiscation legislation got to talk for a half hour at a stint. And it's just horrendous what's going on in Salem, Oregon at the legislative level. And people look around and wonder, why are we in such trouble? And why will the gas tax, here's something I'll be keen on auditing, the ODOT is suggesting a gas tax somewhere near 95 cents a gallon coming up in the next election. They didn't Wow. do it in this short session because they knew November was going to tan their hide. And they pushed it off to the long session. 2025 will be the first year that they even, you know, put this on the table. People have already spoken out against toll roads and whatever. Wait till they see a 95 cent gas tax increase. And now that everybody's pumping their own gas, you can get out of your car and while you're standing there, read the little sticker that's on the pump. The sticker that's on the pump says that Oregon gas tax right now is absurd. You know, local tax is usually zero. Federal tax is 38 cents or 30, yeah. 18 cents, I guess.
And isn't it about 45 for state tax, roughly?
Yeah, pretty close and to that. Gas tax is close to 45 cents. And it's like, really? And they're going to bump that to $1.50? Are you crazy?
Oh, hey, in their carbon obsessed world, you bet they're crazy, but they're serious as a heart attack. Okay, and I don't think we can certainly look. We have to look askance at this. You know, you get to the point where maybe what solves the problem is just fiscal insolvency here, Dennis. I know that I'm looking at that as a blow up the system kind of thing. I know you can't advocate for that, but you wonder if that's the only thing that will sharpen minds. It's like, we'll continue to do stupid Democrat policies until they're just out of money and there's nobody left to tax. Could I be wrong about that? Or is that too defeatist
well,
on me?
Well, yeah. See, this is why I want everybody in Oregon to be a professional skeptic when it comes to all of these marketing policies that are, you know, noble pursuits that are actually, you know, disparage our human condition, our flourishing here in the state of Oregon. They sound good because it's just a marketing scheme. And we all know that marketing schemes, you know, told by, you know, salespersons.
Well, okay, they're smooth lies, okay? Let's just call it that way. Smoothly crafted lies. There we go. Emphasizing the good.
Go.
All right. ElectDennis.com.
Crafted lies.
Yeah. ElectDennis.com and
too long.
All right, ElectDennis.com is the website to go support him, and I certainly hope you do, because we need a Republican in the Secretary of State. It is a partisan position, okay? Needs some balance on this and the audit power, and also the control of election rules and various other things would be quite helpful here in the state of Oregon. Also, by the way, Dennis, of course, will be at the Make Oregon Great Again, the MOGA event, a week from Saturday, Jackson County. And you can find out more about that on jcor.gop to buy tickets. All right, Dennis, thank you so much. And we'll talk next Wednesday.